Psalm 97, the fifth of this series about God's kingship. And this psalm celebrates God's justice, which vindicates those who are loyal to the covenant. It's quite a lovely set of texts here, looking at all the different aspects of the kingdom. All other gods and all those who do evil cower before the manifestation of God, the judge. Verse 1, Yahweh is king. Let the earth rejoice. Let the many coastlands be glad. Isaiah 51 might, or 42 first. Sing to Yahweh a new song, his praise from the end of the earth. Let the sea roar and all that fills it, the coastlands and their inhabitants, let them glory to Yahweh and declare his praise in the coastlands. Isaiah 51, I will bring near my deliverance swiftly. My salvation has gone out. My arms, A-R-M-S, my arms will rule the peoples. The coastlands wait for me and for my arm, the strong arm of justice, will they hope. Verse 2, clouds and thick darkness are all round him. Justice and right judgment are the foundations of his throne. This idea of thick darkness, meaning you can't see God. You can't penetrate the dark night of the soul, all that imagery which I presume you're familiar with. We can't get God and define God and lock God in anywhere. We just can't see God. Thank God we have Jesus, so we can see what God looks like in a human way, and we can know the way to God, which is Jesus. Now that's a wonderful help. But we can't see God. Well, the darkness, a few images on that. Exodus. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning, as well as a thick cloud on the mountain, and a blast from a trumpet so loud that all the people in the camp trembled. So these are the angels up there who must have good lungs. But they're actually spiritual, so we're not sure what to do with that. But this is all the beautiful background music to this event. Deuteronomy 4. You approached and stood at the foot of the mountain while the mountain was blazing up to the very heavens, shrouded in dark clouds. This is Tolkien material, you know. That's the kind of literature we're dealing with. Psalm 18. He bowed the heavens and came down. So you've got this image of God being up there in the sky somewhere. Everyone seems to have that image, and that's fair enough. Doesn't work, but anyhow, it's our image. And so God comes down through the clouds. Thick darkness under his feet. He rode on a cherub. And don't think of one of Botticelli's blooming cherubs, these little naked little babies, all bulging bums. The cherub is a mighty creature with, you know, the, well, you've seen them, I hope, in the Iranian temples. And they stood there on the outside of the temple, daring anyone to dare enter. And they've got wings like eagles, and they've got the face of a man, so they've got intelligence, they can see that, and they've got the body of a lion, I think, and the feet of an ox. They've got all these powerful stuff. It's out of those four things, by the way, that we get the four evangelists, and we play with those images all over the place. Well, that's a cherub. So God is coming swiftly on one of these mighty creatures. He came swiftly upon the wings of the wind. He made darkness his covering around him, a canopy, thick clouds, dark with water. Out of the brightness before him broke through the clouds hailstones and coals of fire. How you going? Well, that's the kind of stuff. But this psalm is picking up some of that imagery. Clouds and thick darkness are around him, repeating the text. Justice and right judgment are the foundations of his throne. Now we pick that up in this many places. But the foundations of his throne are justice and right judgment. Here they have Psalm 89. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Same idea. Steadfast love and faithfulness go before you. Happy are the people who know the festal shout And the festal shout is probably Hallelujah. Yah, Yahweh. Hallelujah. Let us praise. Hallel. Hallelujah. Let us praise. Yah. Happy are those who know the festal shout, who walk, Yahweh, in the light of your countenance. And I'll just give you a little bit of John of the Cross from The Dark Night of the Soul, the second book, the fifth chapter, where he writes, "When God sends the illuminating ray of his secret wisdom out from himself to a soul that is not yet transformed, it causes thick darkness in the understanding, because all our thoughts have to be darkened. They're so imperfect or so wrong, they have to be darkened so that we can get the wisdom from God. We have to have our theology completely shattered if we're ever going to know God. So there has to be, we've got to do all we can, but there has to come a time when God's light, like the sun, obliterates all the stars. The stars are beautiful and we need them. But when the sun comes, you can't. It has to be a darkness so that the understanding won't keep trying to define God, but will give in and let God love us into communion, or what he will call transforming union. Verse 3 of our psalm now again. Fire goes before him, consumes his adversaries on every side. His lightning lights up the world, the earth sees and trembles, the mountains melt like wax before Yahweh, the Lord of all the earth. Plenty of texts similar to that. I don't need to give them to you. Just a couple. Isaiah 29. You will be visited by Yahweh of hosts with thunder and earthquake and great noise, with whirlwind and tempest and the flame of a devouring fire. They're using their most powerful experiences to talk about God. Volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, everything. All language is based on experience. And they're just, this is the kind of background imagination for them when they think of Yahweh. Which takes us back perhaps to the letter to the Hebrews, which says, talks about that. You haven't come to a mountain, and he goes on with thunder and lightning and all this. He quotes all this. That's not what you've come to. You've come to the assembly of the saints. The communion of, talk about the communion of saints in the Christian church. Full of light and love. And it's a new world we're entering, beautiful world, the Christian world. Isaiah 30, the tongue of Yahweh is like a devouring fire. Daniel 7:10, a stream of fire issued and flowed from his presence. Psalm 77, your lightning lit up the world, and the earth shook, trembled, and shook. Everything melting before Yahweh. Well, there's dozens of texts on that too, but I don't think we need to go through them. It's the imagery, as long as you've got the idea that this imagery is traditional, common. And if anyone takes it literally and forgets its poetry, then take them out with you to a play or a dance or an opera, or just read them a poem or do something to help them get free of their mental constipation. Verse 6. The heavens proclaim his righteousness. All the people behold his glory. All worshippers of images are put to shame. Those who boast, who make their boast in worthless idols. All gods bow down before him. Speaking of worthless gods, this is a good text from Micah, chapter 1. Yahweh is coming out of his place and will come down and tread upon the high places of the earth. The mountains will melt before him and the valleys will burst open like wax near the fire, like waters poured down a steep place. I will pour down her stones into the valley. Talking about Samaria, capital of the northern kingdom, I will uncover her foundations. All her images shall be beaten to pieces. Similarly, on the worthless idols, here's Isaiah 44, verse 12 and the following. It's a lovely text, or powerful enough text. The iron smith fashions it and works it over the coal, shaping it with hammers and forging it. These are the idols. He makes it in human form, with human beauty, to be set up on a shrine. The carpenter makes a god and worships it, and makes it a carved image and bows down before it. Half of it he burns in the fire. Over this half he roasts meat, eats it, and is satisfied. He warms himself and says, "Ah, I'm warm, I can feel the fire." And the rest of it he makes into a god. Very, very cynical. He bows down to it and worships it. He prays to it and says, "Save me, you're my god." So Isaiah's having a good go at... Well, this is the second Isaiah. This is talking about what they found when they went to Babylon. And saw all these man-made gods in the temple shrines. They don't know, says Isaiah. They don't comprehend. Their eyes are shut. They can't see. Their minds as well, so that they can't understand. No one considers, nor is there knowledge or discernment to say, "Shall I fall down before a block of wood?" He feeds on ashes. A deluded mind has led him astray, and he cannot save himself or say, "Is not this thing in my right hand a fraud?" However, dear prophet, second Isaiah, he was misunderstanding what they were doing too. As we can often do when we look at another religion. We read it from outside and we don't know what they're doing. They weren't worshipping bits of wood. These were images that reminded them of a spiritual presence. And had a Babylonian gone into the Jewish Holy of Holies and seen two cherubim on top of the altar, they would have said that they were worshipping these cherubim. No, they weren't. The cherubim were there guarding the place. So we do it with the people, we do it, don't we? We've got our own view, and we look at other people and read them in light of our understanding and then misinterpret them and then criticize them. That's in fact what the prophet's doing here. I mean, he's doing something good as well, of course, you know that, but I think he's not fair in his criticism of what they were doing. Psalm 97, verse 8. Zion hears and is glad, and the towns of Judah rejoice because of your judgments, O God. For you, Yahweh, are most high over all the earth. You are exalted far above all gods. That's traditional and typical. Verse 10. Yahweh loves those who hate evil. He guards the lives of his faithful. He rescues them from the hand of the wicked. Light, here I have to give you a bit of Hebrew, it won't hurt you. The Hebrew text reads, the Masoretic text, life is sown for the righteous. And the Hebrew word is zara, with a guttural, zara, ending in a guttural. However, the Greek text, which is a translation of a more authentic Hebrew text, an older Hebrew text which is more authentic, says light dawns for the righteous. And the word for dawn in Hebrew is zarah. Zarah and zarah are easy to hear wrongly and write into a text wrongly. So every now and then you find the Hebrew text is faulty. But thank God we've got other translated texts that can help us look at them, and it's a big scholarly endeavour to get the actual correct text. And everyone agrees that the correct text must be Zarah. Light dawns for the righteous. The Greek is actually anatello. You've probably heard Anatolia. That was the Greek word for Turkey. Because Turkey was where the sun rose. Anatole means the sunrise. Rises, dawns. So there we got it. Light dawns, that's where the sunlight comes from. The light rises up from the righteous, for the righteous, and joy for the upright of heart. Rejoice in Yahweh, O you righteous. Give thanks to his holy name. And that's the conclusion of Psalm 97. A couple of texts for reflection. Amos 5:15. Hate evil, love good, establish justice, righteousness in the gate. Luke 21. When these things begin to take place, this is Jesus' words in the eschatological discourse, a re-look at the whole meaning of history, really, in that when these things begin to take place, stand up, raise your heads, your redemption is drawing near. And Isaiah 9, which is quoted in Matthew, the people who walked in darkness, these the people of Galilee, have seen a great light. Those who lived in the land of deep darkness, on them light has shone. Verse 11, light dawns for the righteous, joy for the upright of heart.